You're listening to
Hot Garbage.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Hot Garbage Podcast, your weekly music playlist. Thank you so much for joining us this week. We really, really appreciate it. If this is your first time, welcome aboard. If you're coming back for more, so great to see you. My name is Drew. Joining me as always is the top hat to my bowler, my dear friend Andy.
Yeehaw. How you doing?
Howdy, 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 Andy. I'm doing well. How about you?
Oh man, I found a longboard on the side of the road yesterday, really? So I'm doing pretty good.
Was it in pretty good shape? Are you?
No, I mean it had like parts of the trucks were missing, and there's no wheels or bearings. But
you literally found the board.
I've got part of a longboard. I've got the board. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's half the battle. More than half, really.
Yeah, that's the bulk of the battle.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say? I mean, I guess some people would say that a full complement of wheels is the majority of the battle.
Yeah, I mean it doesn't move or anything, and it needs new grip tape. And
but it's symbolic of a lot of things.
But I found it. Yeah.
Yeah. That's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
It's also wonderful that our silent partner Nate is with us, making the sound happen. Without him, this would just be an hour and a half of silence. And I don't think it would be worth listening to.
I'd still do it.
As it is worth listening to, because this week we were so fortunate to have Adam Posse and Alex Rios on the show. Two of Portland's funniest human beings. Stand-up comedians who have been killing it here in the Portland scene. They're also the host of their own podcast called Chumba and Wumba.
So this is kind of an unofficial crossover, maybe even unbeknownst to them.
Yeah, they didn't know it, but we were really building on the Chumba Wumba name.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely check out their podcast. You can check them out on all of the sort of online social platforms to see what they're up to. Two of the busiest, hardest working comedians in Portland. So I know you can see each of them at March 21st, but go out and check out what they're up to. And check out their podcast, which you can download on iTunes if you are so inclined. So while you're leaving Andy, Nate, and I a rating on iTunes, go ahead and take that extra step and download Adam and Alex's show. In case you're on the fence about that, check out our conversation with them on this week's episode of Hot Garbage and see for yourself.
I'm trying to get to the point where our old new listenership is just porn bots. Is that going to be done?
Yeah, I mean, if there was some kind of like free membership that could be a part of that.
That's what I'm going to start doing. I'm going to start accepting all the porn bot requests and then just advertise our podcast on their page nonstop.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, that's awesome because there's usually never any other posts on their page. It's just like one picture.
That's a way to get like a lot of like 40-year-old horny guys to listen to us.
Right.
Yeah, that's our like, demographic too.
And people are usually only like masturbating in like 12-minute like runs.
I mean, that's what I do.
And so there's like a minimum 19-minute refractory period. So you're like, that's like, you know. Four sessions to get an episode. So, you
know. Yeah.
12 minutes? Who's taking me? Am I doing it wrong? What's going on over here?
I can't tell which way you're
there's
saying
there's a lot of
wrong.
Edging now.
Are you like a 35-minute kind of guy? Or are you like a 7-minute kind of guy?
Get in and out.
Okay. All right. It depends. It depends on how many tabs I have open.
It takes me longer to find the clip than it does to play the game.
It's the hunt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. It all depends. Like, you know, I could squeeze one out in like a minute and a half if I got to be at work or something,
right?
You know, or if I'm at work, you know,
exactly. So, if I have to be back to my desk,
but if I'm, you know, you take 12 minutes to make love, it's, you know, to myself.
Yeah, so, I feel great. I feel great about that. I feel like I've done my job.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'll go just off thought, just with imagination, and at the end I'll have this weird sense of accomplishment, like yeah, still got it.
Yeah.
That's weird. I haven't done that since.
I'm going to jerk my way through the Armageddon, no problem.
Yeah, that'll be easy when the power goes out. Y2K will not fuck with your...
No, we got those clocks dialed.
That's like analog. It's how like bands are recording on tape again. You're just bringing back the imagination.
Yeah, analog masturbation, that's what I'm about.
Have you found it's still there? Like, are you as sharp as you were when you were like 17, pre-internet times?
Maybe better, because I have actual life experiences that from now.
Ah, nice. Yeah.
You ever like try to like remember what you used to masturbate to when you were like 14 or 15, and then like try to like Does that still get me going? Like
music videos?
Yeah.
Mostly X-Men.
Like the swimsuit edition. I was big on the Sports Illustrated.
No, I think that's
edition.
The first thing I jacked off to was the 1992 Marvel swimsuit edition.
The Marvel swimsuit edition.
Yeah.
I remember that. I remember the had like a poster insert or something like that.
It did. And my poor mom, I thought it would be smart after I jacked off into a sock to blow my nose onto it.
Immediately after?
Yeah, but like on a different side, just be like, oh, she won't know. She'll just think I was really sick and blow
kind of like
nose.
If you put a pack of cigarettes in a trash can, you put regular trash on top of it.
Exactly. But I think it backfired. I think she probably thought I was just producing copious amounts
just
of
huge
cum.
Loads.
Yeah, just
she just thought you had like mess. Green cum or something.
Yeah,
like.
Just teenage loads.
She never brought it up, so she probably thought there was something
or
really
she thought
wrong
you were
me.
Extremely sick.
Yeah.
Just like full of mucus.
Yeah, that kid is just full of snot all the time. He just can't stop blowing his nose.
But it's clear snot, so it's actually healthy. Mucus, you're just producing a lot more than usual.
Just histamines. And you never had like chapped lips. It was like that, those tissues that have a little bit of lotion in them.
Yeah. The thing about having a runny nose is if you get it all out, you're fine. So you just got to constantly blow your nose
every 19 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
For 12 minutes at a time.
Time yourself next time. Just get a sense, you know.
If you want me to come over, Adam, I'll just like have my phone out and I'll just be like,
"Go
and go."
Can you light me before I'm supposed
to
finish?
Yeah, I'll give you a 2-minute light. If you're running the light, I'm gonna be waving it. Like.
Or like when the host comes on stage at a mic, you'll start jerking off if I start running the light too hard.
Right.
You're like, oh, someone else's turn.
I'm gonna bring you up to your like bathroom. And then shake your hand like right and then like right when he unzip your pants.
Your next performer touches himself all over town. He's touched himself on multiple festivals.
And he just cleaned the pipes backstage. Extra funny. Extra real. What do you guys remember about the first time you ever did stand up?
Mine was at a bar called the Yukon. It's in Selwood. It's one of my favorite bars. I was comfortable doing it there because I'd been wanting to do it, but I was so scared, and the Yukon was my home bar.
Solid tacos there.
Yeah, I never get the tacos. We always go tater tots.
They always do 3 for $1 there.
Oh, damn. Two's, is that a new item? Because I know it's changed.
This was back in the day. I don't know. I haven't been there in a long time.
But yeah, I went up there. It was a regular mic because I didn't understand how comedy open mics worked first. I thought I had to work my way up to doing a comedy open mic.
Like you had to book before you could open mic?
I had to be good enough to do a comedy open mic. I did.
Turns out that like...
Well, I guess I don't know what a regular mic is then. What do you mean by a regular mic?
Oh, it's a music mic, basically.
Oh, I see.
Mixed
okay.
music mic, so it's just musicians and poets, and then just me going up there. First of all, I did 10 minutes, which is way too fucking long. For a brand new comic. That's another misconception I had. Is that did you feel that way too? Like when you first went, like, oh, I got to do everything I've got.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I also thought, like, I talked to someone that, like, he was about to do like 30 minutes. And I felt like that was insane.
Jesus.
I was like, really?
How long would it take you to build up 30 minutes now? Now that you know what you're doing, like, how long does it take to prepare that kind of set? If you're doing new material.
New material?
Well, yeah, that's something that everyone works different.
Yeah. I write at least 30 minutes every year.
Mm-hmm.
That's worth keeping.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm always... I churn jokes out pretty quick, but I throw a lot away.
Yeah.
I put them on the back burner and work on them at a later date.
When you... So, I'm always curious about this because I feel like writing stand-up would be one of the hardest things to do. I can't even imagine what the process is like, but... when you say you work on a joke, like how do you keep it funny in your own mind since you're taking it apart and working with it so often? How do you keep your like sort of humor distance so you can tell if it's working or not?
For me, I feel like I have some jokes that like I've like done for like 4 years that like I'll add new lines, like tags to it, like new stuff in within the joke. Mm-hmm. And I think that, like, keeps it a little fresh for me and, like, exciting, you know? I'm, like, kind of excited to tell because I'm like, oh, I found a new way to tell that part. So it's like, oh, it's not so boring and, like, you know, I'm not as tired of it anymore. It feels a little new, you know?
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, I mean, as far as keeping it fresh, I, like I said, I churn material out real fast. So if I'm starting to get tired of something, I'll either try to start work, I'll put it on the back burner, or I'll start working on something new, or I'll bring back something that I hadn't gotten to where I liked it before. That way, once really when I get tired of a joke is when it starts to work really well, which is unfortunate. Right.
When you've got it down.
Because it kind of takes the thrill out of it. The risk is a lot of the fun. And so I guess part of the trick is to write something that keeps me amused doing it for a while. And also, like Rio said, to always try to find new parts of it, because if you can maintain the quality, a 4-minute joke is better than a 3-minute joke if it's just as good at the 4-minute mark as it was at 3.
Yeah.
What do you remember about the first time you really ate shit on the mic?
Same night.
Same night. Yeah. The first one. I've heard some comedians say, like, you know, they do. You were talking about being on your home turf, and they like get all their friends out, and so they feel real comfortable. It's that second or third one where they really fall on their face. But for you, right out of the gate.
Yeah, no. Most of that set sucked. Most people didn't even look at me until I got to a joke about masturbation, and that turned people's heads and piqued them a little bit. And I got somewhat of a response during that joke, but then. It's funny, because it was my home bar, I bombed on stage, then I just went and sat at the table with everybody and killed talking shit and had everyone cracking up. In fact, that was like that was one of the first wake-up calls to trying to figure out how to do stand-up. It was like, all right, well, trying to be funny is different than just goofing off and being funny. And so I try to connect what I do on stage with as much as I can to what I do with my friends when I'm just having a conversation, because that's why we started our podcast, is because some of the hardest times I've ever laughed is when it was just in conversations with Rios.
Yeah. I think the first...
You can say that back to me.
Oh, well, it has to be mutual. Yeah. You know. No, I mean, definitely, I agree. Like, us just, like, hanging out is just, like, what the podcast is, like we said. So, like, all we just did is like we'd hang out anyways and you just turn it on, and like definitely I feel like when we get done doing a podcast, I feel like I'm like more prepared to go on stage when I hang out with Adam.
Nice, good warm up.
Yeah,
because we just try to find something funny and keep the ball in the air.
We're usually, I think on the podcast, most of the time we're able to like go off, like riff off each other pretty well and keep it going.
And you've heard it. It's like 80% fat joke.
Right. Like, the best
of those we got down.
Yeah, it's always there. That's always there. Right, right. What was it about, I guess, what in your lives made you want to get up on stage and do this? I mean, at some point you go from being like a funny person with your group of friends to thinking you can bring this to strangers. What was that moment for you that made you want to do this in the first place?
Yeah. For me, it was, I started in San Francisco. I did like probably like 5 to 8 open mics in San Francisco. And what like made me want to do it is just like, sounds shitty, but just like a girlfriend just broke up with me. I moved to San Francisco to get away from her with some friends, and I just wanted to try something new.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, it was like, I was brokenhearted and I felt shitty, so I just like had to find like a hobby or something to do.
Yeah.
So, and I've always loved stand up ever since I was a kid. It was always like a big part of my life, and I was always a fan. I always kind of wanted to do it, because like back in high school, me and friends used to make like dumbass movies, like funny movies and stuff. So I was always thought about doing stand up, and I was like, well, I'm here. Know someone that does open mics. I worked with someone. He brought me with him, and yeah, it's kind of been doing it ever since.
Nice.
For me, it was just always being a fan of it and wanting to do the same way that, like, anything that I'd watch, I'd always fantasize about being able to do it, whether it's like music to pro wrestling, and stand up is something I've always loved. Also, growing up, I just valued comedy was the way because I was an army brat, so I'd move somewhere new every couple of years, and that was just the way that I got to relate to new people. It was how I made friends, was being funny. And so just making people laugh mean that much to me for that long in my life, it just seemed like the next step. Like, I wanted to do it forever, In fact, for like, I was writing jokes for about a year before I got on stage and just doing them in my friend's kitchen whenever me and him got trashed together.
Nice.
I would love to do stand up, but mostly I just force it on a group of coffee moms. Yeah. A coffee meetup that I do for school.
Yeah, anytime there's a captive audience, I try to be as friendly as possible.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They're not going anywhere, and the entire coffee house hears me, so.
Right.
When it gets really quiet, I know I'm doing really good.
when there's just crickets right afterward.
Yeah.
Well, we're sort of a music podcast, so I do want to get to some music. I know you guys brought some tunes to play, but I'm always curious, like, when you guys were, like, 15 years old, what were you listening to music-wise?
Exclusively rap.
100%.
Yeah. It wasn't until like 98 that I started branching out and listening to stuff other than rap and hip hop.
What hip hop were you listening to?
Mostly East Coast. Wu-Tang was probably top above everything else. Outkast had just come out when I was that age, and they were really cool. Goody Mob too.
Goody Mob was awesome.
Real different stuff. Busta Rhymes, I was crazy into. I was super excited when Busta Rhymes did a solo album because I liked his old group too, the Leaders of the New School, and they were great. And so when Busta broke out solo, it was like, yeah, this is exactly what I wanted. I'm trying to think who else I really liked. Like later on, around 96, 97, I had actually moved to the Bay Area and I got turned on to a lot of the Bay Area underground. One, I gained an appreciation for E-40 because I was just East Coast rap and nothing else mindset. Then my friend like, stop talking shit, listen to this. I'm like, all right, this is amazing.
Yeah, E-40 sounds like nothing else.
And then Hieroglyphics, to this day I'm still a huge fan of. Dell, probably, like most people, above everybody else. I'm trying to think.
Mac Dre?
Wasn't a big Mac Dre guy.
Really? Oh, man.
Yeah. I was more Backpack.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, his stuff did seem really crazy. It was.
Yeah, his stuff was really bass specific.
Yeah, it was.
Even though I did like the fact that he had a song called Stupid Doo Doo Dumb.
What about you, Alex? What were you banging on back in high school?
It was it's basically like still like stuff I still listen to. It's like I grew up listening to a lot of punk and metal, and that's. But, like, it was, like, when I was in high school, it was, like, when I was a freshman, like, my favorite band was, like, the Deftones. Like,
oh, yeah.
That was, like, it still kind of is my favorite band.
They're still great.
Yeah, yeah. And Deftones, and it's like, been, like an equal amount of, like, metal and punk. Like, punk I listened to when I was in high school was, like, Poison Idea. I'm wearing this shirt right now. And, when I was in high school, I got into a lot of Oi, a lot of like
Cox Bar.
Yeah,
I love Cox Bar.
Yeah, yeah. I've seen them before. There.
Oh, really? Yeah. Nice. Yeah, they play in San Francisco every once in a while, huh?
No, I saw them in Las Vegas.
Oh, okay.
So, cool. Yeah, just a bunch of old men.
Yeah.
And Cox Bar is great. Foreskins, Sham 69.
Mm-hmm.
A bunch of other shit like the.
Yeah, Foreskins had the song ACAB, All Cops Are Bastards.
Mm-hmm.
It's fucking great.
Yeah. And when I was a kid, I would come to Portland a lot, and like, that's how I found out about Poison Idea and Millions of Dead Cops. I liked those two bands a lot growing up. And
MDC was cool because they would change what the last letter of their band meant depending on what they were feeling. Like sometimes it was Millions of Dead Christians. They had a bunch of different shit.
Yeah.
I like that a band could do that. Like, you know, it's that band, but it was different.
But they started out with Millions of Dead Cops, I think. And absolutely. Then they just kind of like, it was like, but, in like late high school, I got into a band called, Meshuggah. Mm-hmm. If you guys ever listened to them, but yeah.
Yeah.
And I just saw them recently, actually.
Really?
At the Crystal Ballroom. And they're fucking amazing. Like, they look like, they're like gods to me, like Meshuggah is. And they're just like, to me, in my head, like, they're the best metal band. They're my favorite metal band.
Oh, man, people who love them love them. I need to give them a chance.
Mm-hmm. There's sometimes people don't like them sometimes because they're like, they're very complicated and they're like just really intense. Like it's just fucking, their shit's kind of insane sometimes. But yeah, a lot of the stuff that I liked when I was a kid, I still like.
Yeah, I was growing up, I was the same, like, about the same age, and, like, listening to sort of that West Coast, like, Fat Records, punk rock music, yeah. That kind of stuff. I wasn't super heavy, but it's been a little bit depressing because a lot of those bands are still playing, and now they, like, you just can see their age on their face. They're, mm-hmm. like, 42 years old, and they're wearing the same T-shirts and stuff like that.
Yeah, and they're really still playing.
Transformation.
Yeah.
Like, I still love that music. I'm going to see the, like, Offspring and... a bunch of people here. And
oh, you're going to the Taco Fest.
I'm going to Taco Fest, yes. Yeah. I forget who else is on that bill, but yeah. I was easily talked into going.
Fat Mike is having a beer festival with a bunch of Fat Records bands.
Really?
That's touring, yeah.
It's funny that, like, NoFX still plays NoFX music.
Right, exactly. You know?
It's like,
they still write NoFX
music. Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
It's cool. It's just funny because, you know, you grow out of it and then they stay the same.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, they're like, we haven't changed. I mean, they've gotten richer, and that's about it.
This is kind of a bullshit thing to say, but I do wish they would at least dress like adults. That would go a long way for me. I shouldn't want them to change. I should embrace their youthful energy, but I just wish they would clean it up just a little tiny bit.
I think it would ruin it for me.
No?
Yeah. I don't know. So it just, I'd be like, you know, poser, fucking poser.
It's like when Metallica cut their hair. Like when Metallica was like, we're grown-ups. Yeah. We don't have long hair.
That's when
anymore.
I started liking Metallica.
Oh, that's ironically. So gross.
Really?
It's not okay.
I worked back from, Unforgiven 2 toward Master of Puppets.
My friend gets pissed off because he says the Metallica songs I like are not Metallica songs. I like it. Probably my favorite Metallica songs are No Leaf Clover.
Yes.
Fuel.
Yeah, I love Fuel.
Your friend's right.
Yeah, no, your friend's no, he's right. A hardcore Metallica
Until
fan.
Until It Sleeps is one of my favorite Metallica songs.
Uh-huh, no.
yeah,
Saint Anger is something. I'm just playing. Even I know better sometimes.
I love Some Kind of Monster, the documentary. I would imagine that even Metallica fans like that documentary, though. That one's cool.
Yeah.
I worked my way back, though. Kill 'Em All. I like Kill 'Em All a ton.
That's good.
Yeah.
It's a good album.
Well, let's play a little music. I know you guys brought a ton. It's up to you who goes first, but do you have a song you'd like to kick us off with?
Go for it, Adam.
Sure. Immaculate and I forget what's the...
Oh, Goldell Bagdini? What's
that? Goldini Bagwell.
Goldini Bagwell. Next, I had it backwards. There we go. Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny. The rap songs I picked today, because I just know those two Portland rappers that I picked out, probably my two ones, my favorite Portland rappers, and I just found both those songs today. Like, it was my first time hearing either one of those songs. This one specifically, good. The Who, it's I liked it a lot. It's a song about identity and stuff, and I actually know about Immaculate from his battle rap career.
Yeah.
I'm a huge battle rap fan. And he's a legend in
that, one of the all-time greats.
Specific arena, because him... along with a few other people, he's managed to be at the top of the game as it changed. Like, most people know him from the freestyle days. And then around 2010, battle rap stopped being like freestyle to a beat, and it started becoming a cappella battles. Mm-hmm. And you bring a written rhyme as opposed to just... And I was kind of like old man hip-hopping it for a minute when they started doing like, right. Well, that's not real battling. And then it's actually the one positive thing a YouTube comment's ever done. Because I was reading the YouTube comments and someone felt the same way I did. And another person made the point, and which is why I love battling in its current form now. It's a cool trick to be able to show up and find a clever way to be like, oh, your hat sucks, or your shirt's ugly, or I fucked your girl, mm-hmm. or your mom's a bitch, or some shit like that. But these dudes take months at a time to research each other's life and pick each other apart. And so it's basically like the roast battles the comics are doing now.
I was going to say, yeah.
But they do it with mm-hmm. rhyme. And Immaculate's one of the most creative people to ever do it. His schemes, he has this crazy third round against a battler named Big K. And it's the whole round he just lays out, just talks about destroying him. And then at the end of the verse... he goes, but then you wake up and you're shaking and sweaty and you realize it's the day before the event. Your death hasn't even come for you yet. And it's just the conceptually does dope stuff. My favorite battle of his are he battled Thesaurus, which is who
that
he
dude
won.
Is also fucking dope.
Yeah, which is who he won the World Rap Championship with. And there's a lot of inside battle rap baseball there. But like, if you know what they're talking about, the disses in there are so personal. Like, that was when battle rap really got personal, because they were talking about real shit. He laid, one of my favorite schemes of his was he laid out his whole career, how they won the World Rap Championships together. And he goes, I've put out 6 projects since that time, and you still haven't been on a single record of mine. And then he has another one against actually a battle rapper who passed away this week named Bender, this Canadian dude whose style I really liked. And it's just, it was the battle that let the modern era of battle rap know that he's still one of the big dogs, because Bender had just lost the championship of the Canadian league that he's in. And I know Canadian battle rap league doesn't sound prestigious, but it really is one
of the
best.
Those are the heavy hitters, yeah.
It is one of the best.
That's like the spot.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. Yeah. It's one of the best. There's some of the best battle rap takes place there.
Also, and compliment battle raps came from there, and those are fucking great.
I know there's a big
that's a thing
in like the Maritimes,
and it's fantastic.
Really,
it started at King of the Dot as kind of a joke,
yeah.
And they just compliment each other, and it is, you can tell these dudes like battle each other for real, and they know each other, and it's really funny. I highly recommend.
Wow,
falling down that YouTube hole.
I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah, that's why I added it. I used to have a wheel show where you spin a wheel, and the comedian does. Well, we still have it. We just do it real infrequently, but the comedian will get a challenge for the second half of their set, and one of the challenges was compliment rap battle.
That's the best.
Because I used to try and freestyle back in the day. I was all right at it, actually. I used to love rhyming and shit, and then in watching battle rap, I got this like, oh, I want to rap again. But I realized, oh, but I'm not willing to talk about shooting people, which I've never done, or say the N-word 40 times or call someone a faggot anymore into a microphone. So,
and then you run out of things to rhyme almost immediately.
Yeah, so that was all I had. Right. But it was like, but if it's a compliment battle, then maybe it's just saying, so that's what made me want to do that on the wheel.
Yeah.
But it's a lot of fun. But
find a rhyme for handsome, then you're in the compliment scene.
Branson.
But this song specifically, I liked a lot. I like the beat. It's actually part of a dual project between Illmaculate and Goldini Bagwell, and they're both members of Sand People, mm-hmm. which is a OG Portland hip hop collective. And it's just a really great showcasing what both these MCs can do.
Absolutely. Well, any excuse to listen to Illmaculate is a good one. What's the name of this track again?
It is The Who. All right, with a question mark.
Must not know who I am. 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 Must not know who I am.
Look around. Everybody want that end result without the work. Might see me shine, I came out the dirt. That means I was grounded first. Dirt from my shoulder blade, solving airspace. Find my place between the clouds and the earth. All about a dollar, but I feel like a million, cause I paint 1,000 pictures worth 1,000 words. If I had to break it down in thirds, just get up, get out, off the couch and serve. Wave bye to the baseline when it's game time. I step out the house onto a cloud, then it's about where I'm going, not where I've been. Don't question my motives, I fair light skin. I'm golden, I'm glowing like E.T.'s fingers. Reach into your soul and stare right. There I am, wanna share my blessing, gotta share my sin. Open eyes, let a vulture fly free, tryna feed on my body your work. You should probably get to know me first, matter of fact, so should I. Bipolarized, I put in overtime to toe the line between a can of Pepsi and culture wine. So if you ask for facts, I probably answer back with this old reply like,
must not know who I am, must not know who I am. You must not know who I am, you must not know who I am.
Shattering mirrors, spilling my guts in the craftiest beer, refilling my cup with amethyst tears. I'm chilling, I'm drunk, and the classy is here. Fuck 'em. They shouldn't have came in the presence of kings, looking afraid. You can get got if you took that to the heart. Standing in the train of thought, you'll get pushed in the way. OG Kush in a J. Way up, just push play, we'll invade your trunk. Off the hip with a blade to hunt.
I'll make the cut, then pop up later like I raise a bump.
I don't make assumptions and fake defunct. Take a substance, my face is numb. A leap of faith is nothing in this game we run. That's a suicide drill, I ain't afraid to jump. Off 2 to 5 pills. Hallucinating like who decides real? Do what I feel, swear to God in me. Probably fuck around and get my human side killed. Shit is do or die, preaching to Jesus. Always on the grind, only sleep when it's needed. Couldn't keep me a secret, God told me I'm the one. When the first shall be last, you don't need to repeat it. Nah.
Must not know who I am. Must not know who I am. You must not know who I am. You must not know who I am.
Company. I feel like I'm Tommy from My Heart the Huckabees. I feel like they're judging me. I feel like I'm lost on them. That's all the subtlety. Step in my shoes. Got nothing better to do. My head is on loose cause my neck is unscrewed. I'm bending the rules. Telling Neo there was never a spoon.
Wide awake for consecutive moons. Chain smoking with the sheep I count. Talking to myself from separate rooms. Like geez, I hate you so much right now. I feel I'm in debt where credit is due. All in my head and out of excuses. They say I'm an incredible dude, but they keep it together. Sometimes you gotta lose it.
I think I'm Bill Murray, lost in translation. I think I'm the real Barry, campaign across the nation. They think I'm cute, they think I'm funny, they think I'm cool, they think they know me.
Must not know
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 the moment when you So occasionally we try to do some segments on the show. You guys down to roll with a segment?
Yeah.
We'll see how it goes. One of my favorites is one we call Scenarios and Stereo. It's basically a hypothetical situation. I'm going to give you guys a scenario, and we'll just talk your way through the choices that you would make.
Okay.
So it's pretty simple. You might have to suspend a little disbelief. There's a little magical realism that occasionally pops in, but you know, use that imagination. Your masturbation skills, I think, will serve you well.
That's where it comes in.
It's right.
Yeah. That's what I've been training for.
Play like you practice. Exactly. So the first situation is this. You are, in the world, you are have this almost supernatural ability to be extremely persuasive.
I fuck you, marry him, kill Rios. Next. Next scenario.
Thank you.
Let's do this.
That's sweet that you would marry me. I am marriage material. But it, okay,
I like that I'm fuckable in this situation, too.
Yeah, that's you are.
I'm that's totally true. Killable.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. I'm killable. Fuckers. Yeah.
So in this world, you have this almost supernatural ability to be very persuasive. And so if you're ever in a sort of an argument or a discussion with someone, people come to your way of thinking. So you can use this for good, like you can persuade people to be more open-minded or to, you know, pass gun control, or you can use it for selfish purposes and you can, you know, sleep with people or get a raise or whatever it may be. So it's very useful. You can use it however you like. But every time you're in a disagreement with someone, an argument where you're persuading them, one pubic hair just like puffs out of your mouth and it starts like on your tongue and you can feel it. And sometimes it just like sits on your lip and it's just hanging out there. This little curly, but sometimes it like shoots across and like lands on the person's cheek. Every once in a while, there's sort of a stinky nut smell that comes out along with it. But you are very persuasive in this situation. Would you choose that power with those conditions, or would you just remain as relatively persuasive or non-persuasive as you are now?
I take the power, but I would only use it for mundane things.
Really?
I'd hang out at a Starbucks and I'd just make people drink the opposite of whatever they want to order the whole
and
day.
Get one pube.
You want a unicorn frappe.
Around.
Yeah. It's like, what, latte? Nah, black. He'll take it black.
Mm-hmm. So you get people to get coffee that they don't want and then they may get a pube on them. Or maybe
in their coffee
or definitely in a place where food is being served.
Oh, yeah.
And certainly out of your own mouth. And you're okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, that's actually very, very fair of you. It's kind of a benign power that only punishes you and sometimes coffee drinkers.
Yeah, there they go.
I think if I'm doing it, I'm going to go full pube. You know, I'm going to go whole hog and get exactly what I want.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I do it, too. I do that.
You would do it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I would if I had that power, I would start a like door-to-door toothpaste selling business.
Mm-hmm.
So I would try to like get people to buy the toothpaste while there was like you know, pubic hair and nut coming out of my mouth.
Yeah.
You're like, buy this toothpaste and it just smells like balls.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Like, oh, I really do want to brush my teeth.
They're already so thinking bad. About oral care.
Yeah, and they're like, why are you selling toothpaste door to door? That's weird. Like, no, you need it.
Yeah.
You're going to need this.
Yeah, this could be you. You could be pubic mouth. It's like when you are like a vacuum salesman and you like bring this dirty square of carpet with you.
Mm-hmm. I was a vacuum salesman.
Were you really?
For a while. I only did like 3 presentations before I was just like, fuck this noise.
Kirby?
Not Kirby, Rainbow. They were in competition.
Oh.
Yeah.
You were the underground vacuum salesman.
They're so hard to sell. They're like a $1,500 vacuum.
Did they do a good job?
Oh, they're incredible. They're also like an air purifier. and they had water in them that the shit went through, so it was like a water filter. Damn. Yeah,
I had a friend who did.
Going to kick me into a fucking spiel.
He was, recruited as any like near homeless person is to work for Kirby, but he was really sold on it. Like he brought it home and he gave us the presentation, not because he was practicing, but because he really believed in the product.
He loved it.
He loved this.
Like, I'm going to change my friends' lives. Like my life just got changed.
Exactly. You have to see this.
Is that the one that like where they had the advertisement where they would like suck up the bowling ball or something like that?
Yes, it is.
Was that the one? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And this was in college, and we had a filthy home, so it was a really nice treat to have a really high-end vacuum cleaner.
The Rainbow thing was they would have you take your vacuum and go over one spot 100 times, and then you'd take the Rainbow vacuum and hit it like 3 times, and you'd pull up like a handful of dirt.
That's disgusting.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy.
That's expensive, though.
Yeah.
Did it, like, suck really your dick, expensive. Too? Like, what?
No.
Like, what else could it do?
It make all.
You too powerful meal? For that, actually. Yeah, you want a lower dangerous. Quality vacuum for...
For it just right. take your dick clean
it,
off?
Yeah, it would suck your dick right off your body.
It'd take one layer of skin off.
Turns out I'm into that, so I'll take it. You sold me on it.
One time use.
Well, what I would do is I would take your vacuum and I'd go over your dick 3 times. And then I'd take the Kirby vacuum and there'll still be some dick that I can pull up there.
Yeah. I'm the Kirby of dick skimmers.
In fact, you know what? I take it back. I'd sell Kirbys.
Oh, man. You can make a killing. They're so expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'll just mop up the pube that pube. I'll just vacuum up the pube that I leave on the house floor.
The part that gets me, the one thing that's a bit of a hiccup, it's not even so much the ball smell, because whatever, I've had bad breath before. I know it's not great, but I could live with having some bad breath. It's the hair coming off my tongue. It's that tongue feel of a thick, coarse pube that I would really, really dislike. Mm-hmm. It's the one thing that would give me some pause.
But it's just when you're using the power, right?
Exactly. It's just when I'm being persuasive.
Right.
Yeah, or if it's like I don't like it hanging on my lip. Maybe this was a scenario that was compelling to me because it was so viscerally disgusting.
We're seeing a look inside of Drew's mind here. His phobia of
pubes. Is this a story about how you're a selfish lover that doesn't give head? Is that what all this is about?
That's exactly. What
I mean, getting like a pubic hair stuck in your like back teeth and you're trying to tongue it out—that's real bad.
Sure. You know? Yeah, but in that situation, at least it's serving a purpose. It's got a context. That I can totally live with that. It's no problem at all. It's that's totally fine, but it also makes sense there. In this scenario, it's just emerging from nowhere.
I wouldn't mind it because I'd just use it to fuck with people, you know? I'd just be like, this is going to be fun. If I have to taste this, then everyone else is going to have some on their face.
Yeah, I'd have fun with it. I'd try to keep it in the air like a feather. Yeah.
Or like if you wish on an eyelash.
Oh, yeah.
Blow it right off of there. Nate was asking if this would make us develop an aversion to being persuasive. I don't know. That's the thing. I assume I would get more and more used to it. I feel like I would get more and more used to having the pubes in my mouth, and I think like I would it would be second nature.
I think eventually I'd start doing it on accident over stupid shit that I didn't really even want.
Yeah.
It'd be like the Midas touch.
Mm-hmm. I would definitely collect as many as I could in a jar.
I just fuck with people hard. Like, it'd like land on their face and be like, oh, you got something on your face, and pull it out and just put it back in my pants.
Is there a voluntary turning it on, or are people just going to be persuaded by whatever I say to them?
Well, you have to be, you have to be like going through the motions of persuasion. You have to make a case.
Okay.
But it turns out that your case is usually pretty powerful.
See, that would ruin dating for me at that point, because it'd be dishonest. I think I could only sleep with prostitutes if I had that power.
Yeah, it would be crazy.
Well, it would be like, to you, you would be making perfect sense. You would be like making your best case. It's not like as if you would be deceiving, because you would believe everything you were saying. It would just happen to work. But you feel like that would be a little bit cheap.
Yeah, because it's a power I have that they don't, so.
All right. But they got a face full of pubes for their troubles.
Unless I see someone else spitting pubes out of their mouth, and I'm like, that's then the one. Know.
Exactly.
Even playing field. Let's right. do this.
Nice.
Yeah. Game recognizes game, pube brother. Okay. Here's the second scenario. You are both commercial airline pilots, and you're on a cross-country flight. You're going LAX to JFK, so it's a long flight. The beginning of the flight, there's like six little kids. It's around their birthday time. You let them into the cockpit. You show them around. You're giving out a lot of wings that day. It's a smooth flight. Midway through, a hijacking begins to take place. And it just so happens that the hijackers in this particular scenario...
Are children.
No. Are they're like really fundamentalist, Christian, hard right-wing white guys.
So children.
Yeah. Oh, that's easy. You just give them the plane.
Well, here's the thing. The good news is you're going to save a lot of lives this day. As pilots, there's going to have a happy ending one way or another. You're going to see this through. But where the choice comes in the first scenario, you overtake them, land the plane perfectly, nobody dies. But you are forced to say that instead of these fundamentalist right-wing Christians, that it is a cobble of illegal Mexican immigrants, Syrian refugees, and Islamic terrorists.
I was going to do that anyway.
Okay. In the other scenario, those six children that you showed the cockpit, they're going to die in this okay, takeover. So, but you get to tell the truth.
So you just got to make the choice between
You've got to make the choice about okay. whether you sacrifice six children in the name of honesty and... Mm-hmm. Or you fan the flames of bigotry.
Would it be possible
and save every life?
Would it be possible to kill the six kids and blame America's enemies for it simultaneously?
That's your choice. And you know, if a pube's popping out of your mouth, we'd definitely believe you. We would buy it.
Follow up question: is Mark Wahlberg on the plane? Because this isn't going to be an issue if he is.
He yeah. is, but he is in the loo when this takes place, and he doesn't act. He does not act. Kinda so he is on the plane, yes.
The guy really let me down.
Yeah, mm-hmm. He did. He's a coward.
So he's just in the bathroom spending his 12 minutes
yep.
just jacking off.
Yep, dropping exactly.
a funky bunch.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'd kill the kids.
You'd kill the kids in the name of...
Honesty. Easily. Not even just to be honest. I just think that, like, you know, you could... kids are trash, and... Like, you know how, like, you see a car that says, like, baby on board, you know, or, like, precious mm-hmm. cargo? Like, no, they're not. The people right. that are paying taxes.
You can literally
that's
make them
precious cargo. The adults, those are, that's precious cargo. Kids aren't. Right. So, yeah, I'd just kill them, yeah. I'd kill the kids for sure.
What race are the kids?
The kids are, like, three are Pakistani, and the other ones are Vietnamese.
I thought you were going to say Wakandan for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
I kill him twice then. Yeah.
Even easier.
Uh-huh. Oh, man.
I think I'd save the kids and spread bigotry.
One last time before I like, crush it forever.
I mean, people are going to say ill shit anyway.
Yeah.
But it's save not like Fox News isn't going to stop broadcasting because I killed these six kids, so... Right. I might as well just throw that on the pile and have six kids' lives to show for it.
Yeah, it would be hard for me to know that I had
wait.
Basically murdered six kids.
In this scenario,
yeah.
Do the white guys kill these kids? Or do you kill these kids?
That's an interesting question.
To land the plane.
I think there is a struggle to overtake the terrorists at which time bullets are flying or, you know, there's a mess. And so it's hard to tell. There's violence and these kids are dead and you're sort of complicit in it, whether it was specifically you or not.
Are these kids Boy Scouts? Because according to the oath, it's actually their complicit duty to help defend the country.
Yeah, it's possible that they took these bullets, but they didn't have to. As long as you could blame.
They were all aiming at you.
Right.
Were they homeschooled?
One was homeschooled.
Okay.
But that's because he was like skipping grades and it became,
became, oh, okay, yeah, so he was a bad gifted. Kid. So he deserved it.
Yeah, exactly. He was insufferable. He was going to turn out to be an awful adult.
Right.
See, that's the thing, too. You never know if these kids are going to be murderers or if they'll go on to molest children.
See, that's the thing. Is like, mm-hmm. That's why I believe, like, given a chance to kill a kid, you might as well just do that because you never know.
Exactly.
You never know.
Yeah. Why take the risk? I'm with you on the adult thing, though. I always used to watch, like, when I watch football, they always have these programs where kids get to hang out with, like, Peyton Manning for a day, and there's no adult version of that.
Yeah.
Where I get to hang out with, like, NBA players and shoot baskets.
Yeah, I mean,
there is now. There's websites. It's just, like, $15,000, and you can hang out.
Well, it's bullshit because we're the ones, that, if you have kids, you're buying everything for them. All the money's coming from you. Why did they get the attention? Why isn't there no reward for all the tickets you buy and jerseys you buy and all that shit?
Right. It's true. Well, we talked about this in our sports episode, how we think that they should pull in a fan every game to take one shot at any point in the game.
Yeah.
The basketball team should be able to call in a...
It should be a play where you can, if you can pick a fan from the arena that you're in and they get to run one play.
Like, would it be like a contest or something, or would it just be...
No, it'd be like a strategic move for the team. Like, if you're playing me and you're down by 5 points and you want to stop a run, maybe that's when you call one of the fans down and they have to take a shot.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's going to work out. Sometimes it's going
to
be...
They have to run a play. They have to run an NBA play.
Yeah.
And maybe one of those times is Charles Barkley.
Yeah. He just comes down. And maybe you get like this D3 college basketball player and he hits it and it really hurts you. But sometimes it's a 74-year-old and you get the ball back.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I would love that. That'd be
cool. I'd be down with
fan
that.
Experience.
It would be.
I'd be so...
They would sell a lot more tickets.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure.
Sometimes it's an 8-year-old kid and turns out he's got mad handles.
I would thrive in that situation. Not that I'm any kind of athlete by any means, but the pressure would not get to me at all.
So I'd save the kids, but I'd call one out of his seat to try and land the plane.
Oh,
that would be great.
Be like, all right, you want to live, earn your keep.
Yep.
And then when he lands the plane, you kill him.
He does.
Or if those kids grow up to be monsters and shitty people, then I'll gather all my Mexican immigrant Syrian friends, and then we'll find them and kill them. Yeah. Be like,
yeah, one way or another, these kids are starting a race war.
One way or another. Yeah.
They're going to get that done.
You never know if one of those kids is going to grow up to be Jeepers Creepers.
Mm-hmm.
That motherfucker's creepy.
He's creepy. That is.
Speaking of creeps, Andy, I know you got some music to share with us.
Oh, speaking of creeps, how about a little transgender cow cosplay from China by way of Germany called COW?
What does this sound like? How did you come across this?
Oh, man. Bandcamp is a magical place. And I don't know, man. I was just looking through like what was popping, what's hot in the streets, and turns out this is out there as well. It's fucking, it's real crazy. I think
in addition to the things that are hot in the streets, this is also out there.
This is their EP, and this song is called Rodeo. We'll be right back.
hotmail.com. Hotmail.com.
So one thing I'm interested in terms of kind of the craft of comedy is that both of you guys have a pretty distinct voice and a kind of a style. How did those develop, and how did you know when you were on the right path for a style that fit your personality and your capabilities? How did that come about?
I mean, step one was, like I talked about earlier, just seeing the juxtaposition between making the exact same people laugh in conversation but not being able to do it on stage. Another part of it, and it's still changing, I write. When I first started, my first couple of years, I used to like going on these really fast speed runs where I say a lot of words. I actually just wrote a joke like that for the first time in a while. And that was because my joke writing actually got better, to where there was more, I could get more out of just a setup and a punch,
right,
than I could one of those runs where part of it's like, wow, he said that really fast. That's impressive. And that was kind of funny, the thing that he said.
So it's kind of like, did you feel like you were hiding behind that technique?
I wouldn't say consciously.
Right.
It was just like it. And as far as what I was able to do and write at the time, I was like, oh, this is the best way to do this, mm-hmm. is to hit that speed run in there. That
it sounds
fun.
Like your love of like freestyle rap and battle rap.
It's
bleeding into hip-hop.
Battle rap bleeds in
stand up.
Battle rap and pro wrestling bleeds a lot into my stand up. Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Yeah. There's a guy I started following a couple months ago. His name's Jonai, and he has a bit of a growl on everything he says. And I noticed that started finding its way on stage when I do it.
I remember you kind of like growling a little bit, like when you first started, like the first like 2 years, I think.
Yeah.
There was always like some stank behind stuff once in a while.
Every joke that I closed with, there was like no mic needed for the last 40 seconds of it, because I'm just going off. Which it's really fun to do. Actually, I'm hoping to merge the two different ways that I've developed into one semblance of that. But yeah, really, it's mostly just been trial and error for me, and then finding funnier ways to say something. And it's still changing. I might be a different comic next year than I am right now.
What about you, Alex?
Basically, like, I tried to, like, in the beginning, copy the styles of people that I liked, mm-hmm. that influenced me, like Stephen Wright and Mitch Hedberg. Those are the people that, like, really influenced me. And that kind of stuck. To kind of found my own way within, in between those two, and made it my own. And like, Adam, just still kind of progressing and, like, doing different stuff. Like, I started out doing... like one-liners, like a lot of one-liners, like, mm-hmm. Stephen Wright and Mitch Hedberg. And now I still like do, I have like a slower style, like where, but now it's like kind of progressed into longer stuff, but like longer jokes. But like how kind of like started doing that was like the influences, and also just like I was like kind of looking for just a funny joke at the beginning.
Right.
And it's like, oh, this is starting to work a little bit, and just kind of latched onto that. Because at first it was like, it wasn't like, nothing was hitting for like a long time when I was doing open mics. And I just kept on going with it. And I was like, okay, just keep on doing that
right.
weird style. Like, so I just haven't, it was really just like, fine. It could have been anything. It could have been like ranting. Like it had been yelling like Lewis Black and been like, oh, I found it. Like whatever it was, I just like kind of latch onto anything that worked.
Do you ever find that as you're writing something, you get onto an idea that you know is funny, but that doesn't seem to match your kind of comic persona? Is there ever a dissonance between, or I guess how does your persona inform the material?
I mean, if I think it's funny, I'm going to try, at least try and find a way to say it on stage. I mean, there's some things that just don't work, but for the most part, if it that's the birth of the joke, really, is if I have a thought in my head and I go, ha, hey, you know what, fuck it. Let's see how that goes. Mm-hmm. Let's see how the world responds to that.
Yeah, I mean, it's, yeah, I mean, similar, like, I like, when I first started, I had, like I said, like, that slower style, and I wanted to keep that, and then I would have experiences in my life that I wanted to turn into a joke, but then I would realize that, like, that wouldn't work for that style.
Yeah, the pairing of style,
yeah,
and content. Yeah,
like, I have a, would, like, have an experience of, like, having sex in a car or something. Like that, and been like, I don't know how to turn that into a one-liner. Right. It could be a story or a joke that has, you know, a longer bit that has jokes in it. So that's where, like, because I used to just, like, throw experiences away. Like, I would tell Adam about something that happened. He's like, why don't you turn that into a joke? And I'd be like, that's not my style. And then I realized I was hurting myself by doing that. Because I just, like, throw things away, and then I'd be like, I haven't written a joke in, like, 2 months or 3 months. And I'm like, because I'm just, like, throwing experiences away. Then I started, like, being able to, like, do that, to take the experiences and turn them into a longer joke.
Interesting.
Like, when Rio said, like, when you're first starting, like, he was saying, you latch on to anything that'll get a laugh. Doesn't even have to be necessarily good. You're just so desperate for to not drown on stage anymore. Like, so I think once you kind of have to figure out how to get laughs first before you can start to, at least for me, well, I don't know. I started telling personal stories. But even still, like, I got better at expressing my stuff. And the stuff I wanted to say on stage changed as well. Like, there's jokes I don't tell anymore. Just because who I am as a person isn't the same as those jokes. So for me, one of the most rewarding parts of it is, like, as someone who's always been a weirdo, you know, and always kind of been the odd kid in a group of people, to be myself super hard at an audience and be rewarded positively for it is one of the more fulfilling parts of it.
Have you found that the further you've gone down that personal route, the better the response is? Has there been a correlation? Do you feel like you're getting closer to your audience?
It depends. I like a little bit of both. Also, I like to antagonize the audience a little bit. Mm-hmm. I enjoy my general attitude on stage is, and it's even, like, willfully ignorant sometimes, but it's... I think there's a good-natured fuck you to everyone in the room coming off of me when I'm on stage. But at the same time, I like to say I betray them as frequently as I can get away with. Right. So I'll build up trust. I had one long set where these guys noticed this rhythm in my jokes that I've had to work on since then. But whenever I start talking softly and it sounds like I'm getting real personal, that means I'm about to say something really terrible right afterwards.
Baiting the hook. Yeah.
And I did it, like, twice, and then I was starting to do it again with another joke that uses that. And I saw the crowd, like, getting ready for it, like, bracing themselves. They're like, oh shit, here it comes. Like, oh, you guys figured me out, didn't you?
Well, that's just another opportunity to betray them now that they've built up your trust.
Get the trust to betray them. And yeah, so, like, in the first years, like, you was just, like, trying to latch on to whatever we can get to make a laugh. And then I think and it's not like I'm a big message comic either way. Like, you can tell how I feel about things by the way I talk about stuff. My main goal is to be funny, but it's just now I can talk about whatever I want to talk about, basically. Hopefully. Piece by piece.
I don't know if I'm asking this in exactly the right way, but I know that, you know, the material you spend time writing, and there's work off stage, and then you're testing things out on stage. But with the polish and the performance aspect, obviously you're up every night, but do you ever take any time away from the stage to work on just the performance part, the cadence, the phrasing, that kind of thing?
I think it's more than that. I think it's important to have time in between performing to, like, have a life, to have an experience so you can write.
Right.
You know, but yeah, I mean, not so much anymore. We were just talking about this last night with another comic where we don't really write a whole lot. We just kind of maybe jot something down and start talking.
Yeah, gotcha. I usually get an idea and then I try and work it out in an open mic. and I talk to myself a lot is a large way of my writing process. But a lot of it, I'd say at least half of my jokes I figure out on stage, and the other half I try to come up with just walking around.
So it never becomes like you're practicing a speech or something like that?
Yeah.
It does. It does become that way.
No. Well, yeah, but it for me it stays organic because I'm learning, I'm practicing the speech in front of people, mm-hmm. and so the speech is interacting with people, even if it's just at an open mic.
Well, yeah. I mean, I would imagine. I mean, this is a very speaking from a place of deep ignorance, but like if I tell a joke that I know that someone else has told me, I can. You get better adding little flourishes to make the telling more lively, whereas the skeleton stays the same.
Sure.
So, I'm assuming that you get a little hook, and then you can kind of adorn it however you like through practice.
Yeah, and it's you find stuff in the moment too. Like you'll see the way people react to a word, maybe, or you'll notice. How a word turns people off, and like you're always adjusting on the fly when you're coming up with stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever mistrust a crowd? I find at certain, I mean, people are coming to a comedy show. I mean, ideally they're there because they want to be laughing and they want to be part of this. And as comedy has kind of risen, people understand, I don't know, people are more excited about it than they've ever been before. Do you ever find that someone, you get a big laugh, but maybe you don't believe in the joke? Do you ever distrust what they're telling you?
I think sometimes it has to do with the room, mm-hmm. you know, like helium most of the time, unless you're just working on brand new stuff, like it's just always going to be hot. It's always just going to, you know, so sometimes you're like, that didn't deserve that big of a laugh. Right. Like people don't, you know, that wasn't that funny. Like, and then sometimes, you know, you can play like a different club here, like, you know, the other comedy club, Harvey's, and like there's tons of packed people. It's just fucking loaded with people, and then you're like doing your best stuff, and it just goes nothing.
Is there in those two places? Is there like a helium? You said it's always hot. People are there, like are pretty much on the same page. Is a different place? Is Harvey's like there's different levels of crowd? Like you have to. Mm-hmm. Are there different kinds of comedy styles in the audience that you have to kind of reach?
Sure, those two clubs are different, and. I'm not trying to just, like, completely shit on one club, but, like, you know, one club's considered the A club, one's considered the B club.
And the other is near the train tracks.
Yeah, right. And you're going to see the wrong side. And so you're going to get, you know, like, Harvey's, they like, you know, they paper the room. They like, send out free tickets.
Yeah,
so
you, it's like classic comedy club business like, model where you just, like, get them in the door, make them have to drink. And you get to see, you know, whoever.
And yeah, they, like, get everyone drunk, make sure the food's, like, decent, and then the comedy set second or third, really.
Yeah, so I feel like at Harvey's and comedy clubs of that style, it's more about, like, let's go out for a night of comedy. And more at Helium, you're going because you know who you're going to see.
That's the thing.
You went for a reason. Yeah.
Harvey's, like, a lot of the time doesn't get people that are, like, currently on TV.
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
It's like you go to Harvey's because you got a free ticket. You go to Helium because you actually want to see that person perform.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Or even if you don't, by and large, Helium's established the culture within the club to where people will go to Helium even they don't know because they know, oh, but Helium usually has really good comedy.
Yeah, so that's
if
usually.
If they're at Helium, they must be good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Man, that variance, though. Mm-hmm. When you don't know who's in the audience, when you don't understand your audience, that would kind of freak me out too.
Yeah, you just kind of, I don't know. We've both done like shows in the middle of nowhere to like you know, fucking hillbillies, and like, you know, you look at both of us and like, you know, I look like I got slapped by a tackle box. You look like Mexico, like, you know, like that we don't look
like a better Mexico.
Yeah.
I look like if Mexico was a second world country.
Just one tier up.
Not a good Mexico, but a better Mexico.
for you people. This is yeah, I don't know. Like you kind of, me personally, I already look weird to them. Usually my hair is like up, like all poofy or messed up, so I look like a freak, so I don't really try to impress them, even if they're gonna like me or not like me. I kind of just go
That becomes an icebreaker.
Yeah, yeah, just like, just go for the jokes, like, because it's, if they're like not gonna like me, then, you know, they've already made up their mind by looking.
Yeah. Also, you talked about not trusting an audience. Something I like to do, partially just because, like I said, I like to antagonize them a little bit, but also to keep myself honest. Like Rios has said, if we're doing a show in the sticks, and I'm doing a bunch of just like politically neutral stuff that's working and it's going great, I'll throw in something that I'm pretty sure they won't like. Like, I'll go hard gay rights or do some heavy race stuff. Just to, like,
this is the real me.
Or just to let them know. Like, they're like, this is all me, but yeah, we're not friends. Right?
Oh, yeah, that's...
And even, yeah, and here, even back home, I'll say something that I know people won't like. Like, I've been working on a joke about a gentleman that I met that has Down syndrome for the last couple of weeks, and...
no one's going to like it.
I love it, by the way. I already like where this is going, but maybe that says terrible things about me.
I mean, I'm not a monster in the joke, but I make an observation, and then the most of the joke is like there's 10 seconds of the actual observation that the joke is about, and then the rest of the joke is just me yelling at the audience, defending my telling the joke. But that would be something I'd do home, knowing that that's going to be harder for people to swallow.
Mm. What are both of your like sort of ideal ambitions for your comedy? Where, you know, where are you driving your careers toward in a conscious way?
Like, in a fantasy world? If sure. I can make enough money to live comfortably and buy my mom a house while still only being known by, like, real comedy fans.
Yeah.
Because I definitely don't want to be famous. But I would like to get paid in the ballpark of a famous person.
Right, yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty similar. Like, my fantasy and what I think is realistic is they're about the same thing. Like, I just would like to be a comic that tours and makes money solely off of comedy.
It'd be nice to have some comedy-based superpowers.
Yeah, like making money.
Like, you get that good at it that you always get paid.
Yeah.
You just walk into a room, people start laughing and throwing money at you.
Yeah.
I don't think you... I feel like if I were a comic, I wouldn't like that. I'd like to earn the laughs.
Sure. Oh, absolutely.
Or at least be deluded into thinking that I'm earning the laughs.
Mm-hmm.
You have the power to tell that one joke so that guarantees one person in the room pees a little bit.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to get hurt, but somebody's definitely going to...
Definitely going to pee.
That's another fantasy of mine. I want to injure or compromise someone's evening because I've made them laugh so hard.
Yes.
Yeah. I just want to ruin a first date.
I just want to get peed on.
Yeah. Somebody came in with like a kind of a cracked rib, and they laughed so hard that like they were in real pain.
Yeah.
I have a friend, our friend Noriko. I'm jealous of him. He made my friend Christina throw up. She was laughing so hard during one of the sets. And then another time, he literally had a lady fall off her bar stool laughing. And I want one of those things so bad.
Yeah. Have either of you ever laughed until you've puked? I have one time.
I have, yeah. I was in high school, yeah.
Best puke is a vivid memory of a puke. It's hard to do, though. It's hard to...
I laughed so hard I shit my pants once.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah,
it doesn't count real. If you start laughing because you shit your pants.
But what if you shit your pants again?
Well, most adults, when they're shitting their pants, the first turd is the shitting their pants, and the rest of the turds they can hold in. But maybe you just laugh your way through the entire dump. Right.
Yeah, I just... Pants. I'm just ticklish there, so it just kept on going. And
I mean, in my mind, that's a wet shit, but was it like a...
No, it was definitely wet diarrhea. Yeah, okay. It wasn't good.
So yeah, it was a confluence of fact.
It was just like an act, like a little. Oh no! Like I sharted, but it was laughter
and laugh induced shart.
You don't meet many people that have shit their pants with a full turd.
No,
not many. Like the yeah,
like
a log doesn't happen spontaneously.
You just can't like kick it out.
Yeah,
no.
Not many people accidentally.
No, unless it's like intentional.
Yeah.
No, this is always because of like too much liquor and burritos. You know.
Yeah.
And then add laughter.
Yeah, laughter. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You both talked about being able to do this as a living you know, being able to support yourself with comedy. But as far as kind of like the creative outlets, is it always stand-up that you envision yourself doing, or are there other pursuits, you know, adjacent to comedy that you would like to do more in as well? Acting or writing, anything like that appeal
some
to
kind
you?
Of like comedy American Ninja Warrior.
It'd be funny as I see that trying to go on the American Ninja Warrior course.
Yeah, both of us like that would not be good.
The salmon ladder.
Yeah. I don't know. I used to think that I wanted to act, and I've done it, and I don't mind it, but I don't exactly like it as much as I thought it was going to be. Me, I personally just want to just do stand-up. So, like, if I ever didn't do stand-up anymore, I don't think that I would, like, try to pursue anything else that's related towards it. But I wouldn't mind, like, I have acted a little bit and made some money off doing it, and I would like to continue to do that because of the money. And it is fun.
Yeah.
But it's...
It's not the worst, but it's not going to be your focus.
It's really just... Stand-up is really just what I want to do. So I don't really have those other things that I really want to... I've tried to... You know, I've written for a few magazines, like a magazine and writing groups for sketch comedy, and it was just like I tried it, and it just wasn't... Didn't really like it.
Right. Doesn't scratch that itch in the same way.
I'm the same way. I've had some minor acting opportunities, and it's enjoyable, and that check is nice. But anything, especially show business wise, that I do would only be to help support my comedy.
Hmm. So, if some of these paycheck things could be your day job, as opposed to,
yeah, you know. Like I'd rather be an actor than a FedEx driver, but ultimately I'm acting for the same reason. I was a FedEx driver, and that's so I could support myself while I do comedy.
Right. Interesting. Okay. Well, we got to play a little bit of music. Alex, I think you're up. Do you have a track that you'd like to jam on right now?
Larry and his Flask, and the song is called Blood Drunk.
Dope band from Bend.
All right.
Those guys are great.
Let's check it out.
Let me bear. There is DNA.
So you guys got time for another quick game?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We usually only do two segments in one show, but you guys are, you know, witty and hilarious, so we're gonna wing it. This is a segment that 50% of the time it's terrible and it's awful, and 50% of the time it's great. It's called License Plate Detective.
And it has so much to do with music.
Yeah, almost nothing to do with music. But Andy, out in the world, will occasionally come across a vanity plate. It's very obviously a vanity plate, but he has no idea what it means. And he documents them, and he's going to share some with us, and we're going to try to help him brainstorm what these plates might mean.
Okay.
So there are no wrong answers. We're just spitballing here. Andy, what's the first license plate that you have observed out there in the greater Portland area?
Oh, okay. This one was one of my favorites. STLLDN.
STLLDN.
So you think it like automatically it's still down, right?
Right. Like, still down for.
I think it's a dude saying he's still Aladdin. Like he has maintained a single jump ahead of the bread line since the 90s.
I'm still that desert rat you always knew.
I steal only what I can't afford.
Yeah. And that's everything. I think it's somebody who's just a really bad speller. Who's just like, this shit's stolen, but they put the D in
stolen.
There.
Stolen.
Stolen.
Or maybe it's
a, stolen.
Maybe it's a DJ / Steely Dan fan. So he's saying, I like Steely Dan.
There's a big old drop in reeling in the ears.
Oh, man. I want to see that DJ.
I thought of Stall Don. Like he's someone who likes to fuck in like either bathroom stalls or changing rooms.
Stall
is like Stall Don. Uh oh, here he comes.
That's a good idea for a sitcom, I think.
Yeah,
the Stall Don,
or a mob boss that only operates on the shitter.
Right. Yeah.
He's got his man standing on the outside. He uses the handy toilet so he can have enough room to hold meetings in there.
There's like a desk in there and like a couch.
Do you know, like, when you go to, like, a really nice place and they have, like, a person, like, giving you napkins and, like, gum and stuff, they should call them the Stall Don.
The Stall Don.
That's what they're called now.
Oh, they do that at really shitty strip clubs, too, though. Yeah.
I said nice places. That's a nice place.
There's titties. It's nice, goddamn it.
All right. Yeah, that's what it says on Craigslist when you're applying for that job. Just, like, you know, deviates looking for a Stall Don.
Yeah.
Or just like still Dan, like, hey, you know, I'm getting older, time's changing, but hey, I'm just still Dan.
I'm still Dan. I'm still here.
Yeah. You can tell by my license plate that I'm still Dan.
Or maybe it's a person who has a lot of Cardinals paraphernalia. And so they're St. Louis laden as a human being.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't even think about that. Big Arch fans.
Yeah.
Gateway to the West. Andy, what's the next plate?
3WB.
3WB.
Three wetbacks.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking three white boys. Yeah.
I was just going to say the posse.
Both racist.
Yeah.
I thought it was, Nate had said earlier, he thought maybe this one was the best year for the WB network. 2003 was like the last year of Buffy, overlapped with Arrow's first season. So it was a good year.
It was their finest hour.
That's a solid assessment.
Yeah. Sharp eye.
2003 WB was a solid vintage.
But I thought maybe it's just a fan of the WB because, like, the three W's are the WWWB.
Oh, someone who's like a hacker.
So they're just like, they're big fans of. What's that frog? Something J Frog? Who was the WB mascot?
Michigan J Frog.
Michigan, yes, that's right.
Yes, I remember that guy.
What's the third plate you got, Andy?
Oh, hold on. My phone locked me out. This is the look behind the curtain here.
This is, an ugly look behind the scenes. At our lack of preparation.
Oh, I like this one. T-U-R-K-B-D.
T-U-R-K-B-D.
I think it's just somebody who's got like a banging turkey bod.
Yeah.
You've heard of like dad bod.
Banging turkey bod?
Turk bod, baby. Ooh, dad bod.
I'm built like a hot turkey.
That turkey. Ooh.
Or like someone who like waxes. Like they're just like, I'm featherless, you know? I got that turkey bod.
Damn, girl, you got that turkey bod. You got thick thighs, no head, and there's a loaf of bread in your ass. Turkey bod. That's what I'm looking for.
Turkey bod.
Dripping with butter.
Yeah.
Mmm, girl, gobble, gobble.
So there's nothing else that could be, right?
No, that's it.
We've solved that case.
Yeah.
Turkey bod.
That was an open and shut detection.
Mm. Oh, man.
Oh, this one.
You got one more for us, Andy?
Yeah. D, soil, and then the number two.
D, soil, number two.
It sounds like dick soil.
Does it?
To me, it does, and I want to know what that is.
But it's D-E, is it right? Two? Why would you think?
D-S-O-I-L, two.
Maybe it's dick e-soil, like it's digital. But D-E, if you're thinking that's dick, that, I mean.
No, it's just D.
Oh, it's just D. D. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. D, I thought it was soil, the letters D and two? E.
Yeah.
Maybe it's someone with a terrible accent saying they're just as yoked as the rest of their friends.
I'm D-soil too, you guys.
Yeah, it's hard when D-soil one is taken, you know? That's like, if they don't give you the first version of D-soil, I think that's when you move on to a totally different vanity plate concept.
It could be Derek So Ill, number two, because this is the second car that he's had
Derek
to get a vanity
so
plate
Ill
for.
Is dope too. Maybe it's an oil baron who's way into internet memes, and he's like, who's oil? D's oil. That's two times.
They're like, someone's just like making their own like body oil, and it's D.
D's oil.
come lather on D's oil.
Oh, shit. Or maybe it's just like a real gangster dude driving like a diesel truck. He's like, it's D's oil. Shit's
also,
D's
oil. Maybe it's this.
As well.
It's the second edition of a special lubricant for the Nintendo DS. Like, if you love DS oil one.
Oh, second generation, they really stepped up the graphite compound. This shit lubricates like crazy.
Whenever I see a 2 on a vanity plate, I always think it's a fleet of vehicles. And I always think it's like Ecto 1 or Ecto 2. Mm-hmm. D-Soil 2 is the second of the fleet. They're the east side.
Mm-hmm.
Andy, okay, so we got time for one more.
All right.
You have a good one to take us home on?
Yeah, this one is O-W-T and then space B-Z.
O-W-T space B-Z. You want to say out of business.
Yeah, it's out the biz. But I like the
like
W.
Like they're retired.
Out. I like that they threw the W in there.
So you know how to pronounce it.
Maybe it's trying to tell you how painful it is to be in the transmission business.
You don't know what it's like.
Ow! It's T-Biz, am
T-biz,
I right?
Yeah.
Ow, T.
Or they were a TLC fan who hated T-Boz's verse.
Oh. Mm.
Chili brought him in on Creep, and then, T-Boz, no thanks.
Yeah. I'm out on T-Boz.
Out on T-Boz, yeah.
All right, so maybe it wasn't a solid one to end on.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, this was better than most. Like we've eaten some real shit on this game before, and I think we ate a serviceable microwave dinner right there.
And those are all real things I saw in the world.
My friend had actually it's the Metallica friend. His license plate was he intended for it to say Dark Lord Master, but it was just DKLDMR, and I'd always tell him that's way closer to Dick Ladd, Mister.
Who's your friend that loves Metallica and all the?
His name's Joe.
Lars
he's
Ulrich.
Friend in Portland.
Oh, okay, it's didn't know if I knew him, so I could you know.
Nah, he rarely comes out. He's a domesticated person.
Sure.
All right. Well, we're time for another song for you guys. I know we didn't get to everything that you brought, do you have another track you'd like to?
Yeah, if you want to pull up that Mike Capes track.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. Love Mike Capes.
That one's a fucking banger.
Yes. Which track would you like to share tonight?
Bucket List 2018 is the name of it.
Fantastic.
Yes. I'm trying. Have you heard it?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Do you
I'm
recognize the beat? I know that beat's been used by a million people, and someone used it in the first place. And it's always for this type of song because the beat is like, this is a mission statement. It's one of those, like, this is one of those, like, about to take over the industry beats that people always put out.
No, I can't place it either, man.
And right?
I know it's going to come to me, like, right when we
end
the
show. It's been making me insane.
Well, let's check it out and see if we can crack this case.
Yeah, it's a hell of a song.
Here's some Mike Capes.
I wrote this shit yesterday. Yeah, yeah. It's Mike Capes. Starting off 2018 with a big bang, nigga. This shit don't stop. Hey. Run it up. Yellow jacket flow, Hall of Famer with this pen and pad. Every word sting, I'm buzzing and got these niggas mad. Known to handle bars like gymnasts on my Olympic swag. Driven by ambition with no intention and kissing ass. Every day a different task. Mission, get a bigger bag. Fuck a critic, get the cash. Count it up and flip it fast. Have these niggas dipped and dragging in the spitting fiction rack.
Niggas getting sick of that. I demolition any track and send it back. Listening, you're witnessing a nigga snap. Like centers at the line of scrimmage. They all fluff, no heart, take a lot of pictures. Ride waves, no float, with a lot of gimmicks. Lack intention in they rhymes written. It's the blind leading blind. In my mind, I define vision. By design, every rhyme scheme defies physics. Peep the signs, you're now witnessing a player in his prime. I'm James Harden meets James Baldwin. Sharpshooter with this ball pen and palm going all in. Vietnam dropping bombs in the margins. Peace offerings or seat coffins. Proceed with caution to be a target to a cold-blooded marksman. Lyrical arson. I'm a Martian with this art, a menace, a monster. From the charts to your heart, I'm willing to conquer. Limitless author. The penmanship is wicked as Willie Lynch's intention. Seth, I'm healing niggas with it. Instead of building division, I'm really spitting the system. Niggas, they really listen to lithomatic conditions. Systems and mental prisons, but they rather hear me rap about trapping and pimping hoes. How I'm about that action, be clapping and killing foes. How I be stacking cabbage, my neck and my wrist is gold. But gangsta killer trapper, I never did fit that mold. So follow the leader, I'm dropping heaters at will. Before I meet the reaper, I'm reaching to make a meal. I used to play the bleachers, but now they reaching for features though. Never mind them suckers, they leeches, I've been deleting folks. Focus on the end result and rarely on the struggle. Took the L's as lessons though, they only made me humble. Blessings over blessings, God then got me out the jungle. Now I'm touchdown Tommy every time I break a huddle. I really about to blow, dog. I've been on the bubble. They looking for the missing piece and I complete the puzzle. Best out the upper left. Really got these suckers pressed. Got my point across and I ain't even had to mumble. A popper's and peel. This flow heavy as anvils. These pen and pad skills. Bury characters in landfills. All about the paper. Push my product like a crack deal. Mainstream sound but underground like an anthill. Lately I've been living and eating off of this music. Strengthening my brand and really building a movement. Before I got my credit, my nigga, I had to prove it. And before I was a teacher, had to become a student. That's free game, but I understand that these things gotta marinate. The rap game is a bad bitch, you can't pimp, gotta serenade. Show love, don't care to hate. Say the shit that they scared to say. Never been all about me, gotta make sure that my parents straight. Fan pool for me, I'm next in line to lead it. My father battling cancer, I pray to God he beat it. So I can really give a shit about your fucking list. 2018, we scratching off the bucket list. I've been on some other shit, yeah. My nigga, I've been on some other shit, yeah. My nigga, I've been on some other shit, yeah. My nigga, I've been on some other shit. 2018, we scratching off the bucket list, nigga.
Yeah, that shit bangs.
All right, guys. Well, we're just about out of time. We'd like to go out on a couple quick hitters. So I'm going to give you just a couple rapid fires. You guys tell me the first thing that comes to mind. We'll try to keep these relatively.
You want to keep them tight?
We'll try to keep them tight. But, okay. You know, there's no promises. Nothing is guaranteed in this world. We'll try to keep them semi-music related, though. Of the recent high-profile musicians that have passed away in the last 2 years, who was the death that affected you the least?
The least?
Prince.
That's how I feel.
Wow. Wow, that's a controversial answer. Yeah. I would say Tom Petty, personally.
That didn't get you.
Not as much as most people.
I would also say Tom Petty.
After I heard he died from like fentanyl or whatever. Mm-hmm.
Like everyone else, who we're all going to die.
And Prince, right? Prince died from fentanyl, too.
Yeah, Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
Like Jimi Hendrix.
Lost a lot of sympathy.
They all died of fentanyl.
At least die of heroin, guys. Come on. This is rock and roll.
I'm respected by everyone.
Yeah, Prince didn't really move the needle for me. I mean, I know that's sacrilege, and I have a lot of respect, but, you know, my musical taste will go on.
Rios does a joke based off of a car ride home where we were playing Prince, and he was miserable the whole time, and me and my friend Christina were yelling. I'm like, how the fuck are you not like Prince? And he just goes, it's not my Prince.
Perfect. Okay, here's another musical one. If you could describe your sexual prowess with a band name, what band would you choose?
Oh, man.
Heavy D.
that's good.
Perfect.
That's real good.
Yeah.
Man, I don't know. Peaches.
These are great answers.
You're fuzzy and you have bad rhythm?
Yep.
If I got to be true to myself, it's Old Dirty Bastard.
I can only think of Rancid because my ball smelled like spoiled meat.
I thought you were going to go with Blink 182.
Blink 182, yeah.
Because you make so much dude ranch in your pants.
Do you go with ODB because you don't wear condoms or pull out?
No.
If you were going to dedicate your name to a deli sandwich at a deli, what sandwich would you choose?
Reuben.
Mm.
Nice.
Oh,
motherfucker.
Yeah. I do love Reubens. They're really good.
And I feel like it's a solid name, too. Just
it is. It is. Reuben. People like to say it. Yeah. And you don't get much sauerkraut in a sandwich these days.
Yeah. I go roast beef, cheddar, heavy mayo, light mustard, extra onions.
Mm. Oh, that's a solid sandwich right there.
Andy?
I think I'd have to go with like a torta. Can I do that? Like a carne asada torta.
Sure. Torta's fair. Yeah.
Just because those
fuckers
are delicious.
Not really like a
delicious.
Deli thing, but I get it.
I'm not trying to go with a sandwich that represents me as a person. I'm trying to go with a sandwich that I want to eat.
Okay. Fair enough. I'd go with like a really high-end PBJ with a pickle spear.
If you're going to do one that represents me, it's probably like a fried bologna sandwich with like grape jelly on it. And then nobody wants that.
Or I would also go like white bread, bologna, mayo, and a slice of like Kraft cheese out of the plastic.
Yeah.
That's a pretty solid sandwich. if you guys could party with any three musicians, who would you select?
Ooh.
Living or dead? You can go across the spectrum.
Prince?
Yeah, I was going to say.
I could tell him how much he sucks.
I want to take fentanyl with Tom Petty. I want to run down that dream.
Yeah. Lemmy. I would,
that's solid.
Yeah, I feel like.
I saw Lemmy at a Portland strip club.
Yeah.
Right before he died. He was playing video poker.
Yeah, that seems about right. That's kind of what he did. Lemmy, just to fulfill like a childhood fantasy, the singer of Deftones,
okay.
Chino,
yeah.
And another childhood thing, Fat Mike, maybe.
Yeah, there you go.
That'd be fun. You can do some drinking with that crew.
Yeah, a lot of drinking.
I would party with present day Noriega.
all pink Kangles and everything.
That dude is so much fun right now.
The game.
Present day Noriega. Probably. Ooh, LP.
Oh yeah, that would be a good one.
Bump cigarettes off of him too.
Yeah, he's got all the cigarettes.
He's LP and he smokes the cigarettes that I smoke. Yeah. So that's a double.
It's a win-win.
That's fantastic. And then Shirley Manson from Garbage, just because I've always had a crush on her.
Oh, there you go.
Interesting.
This question changes for me a lot, but for me right now, I would have to go Chance the Rapper, Bjork, and Carrie King from Slayer.
Mm.
Because that dude seems like kind of an asshole, but if he hung out with those two, he'd probably have a good time.
I want to go big. I want to see what it's like rolling with like Jay-Z and Mick Jagger.
And Drake.
Sure. Yeah. Why not? Yeah. I want like the velvet rope treatment everywhere. I want to get like really weird celebrity weird at that very highest, richest end. Yeah. I want to see how fucked up it gets.
Yeah.
I want to like potentially strangle a stranger to death because that's how rich we're rolling.
Yeah.
At that time.
I like it.
Yeah. Last question, guys. What's the best way people out there can keep track of what you're up to and follow you?
Facebook and Twitter. Twitter handle at Rios Honey Bear, and then Alex Rios on Facebook. Yeah.
Same for me. At Adam Posse on Twitter.
I thought you were going to say the same Twitter handle as him. That's amazing.
I wish. That's a great Twitter handle.
At Adam Honey Bear.
Also at Adam - Posse on Venmo. You want to hook it up? Neither Rios or I are working right now. Also, Rios and I do a podcast together. We drop
absolutely
every Tuesday. And the name of the podcast is Chumba and Wumba, and it's not at all music related.
No, yeah. So exactly. So people that have hated this episode, run right to Chumba and Wumba. It'll be fantastic. Yeah.
Also, if you're in Portland, every Wednesday night at 9:30, me, my friends Marcus Coleman and Shane Brandon host a comedy show called You're Welcome at Mississippi Pizza, and we're one of the best shows in town.
And damn good pizza, too, really.
Yeah, solid pizza.
And when can people see you on stage next here in the Portland area?
I'll be at the Slide Inn on the 11th of March, and the show is called Sincerity is Gross, ran by James Barella, a good friend of both of ours. And then Helium Comedy Club on the 21st of March. Forget the name of the show, but it's ran by another good friend of ours, Todd Armstrong. So
awesome.
Next two times.
I'm on that same show with Rios on the 21st. Also, if you're an aspiring comic, I'll be doing Writer's Block, which is a writing workshop in the club. About 5 p.m. that day, I'll be doing that.
Awesome.
Cool.
And on the 18th before that of March, I'll be doing Minority Retort. It's an all-minority comedy showcase at the Siren Theater. So much like the Black Panther movie, no whites allowed. If we see you there, we'll beat you up.
Or like me, just be really uncomfortable with the whole thing. Either way. Yeah. Well, Adam Posse, Alex Rios, thank you guys so much for being on the show. We really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Yeah. It was great. Fun, man. And thank all of you for checking out this episode of Hot Garbage. We really, really appreciate it. If this was your first time, hope you come back for more.
We're glad you made it this far.
Yeah. You got all the way to the end.
You won. You win the golden finger.
If you are our reliable Japanese listeners, we really, really appreciate you each and every week. If you'd like to reach out to Nate, Andy, and I, you can do so via email at hotgarbagepodcast@gmail.com. That's H-A-U-T-E garbage podcast. You can follow, let's be honest, it's Andy's Instagram at
Hurt
Gerbish.
Big shout out to London. I see you listening.
They're listening and adding you, huh?
Also, big shout out to those horny stepmoms all over Pornhub just doing their dirty little sex business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whoever.
Tip of the cap to you, ladies.
Yeah.
Keep up the good work.
You're doing it.
All right. Well, Andy, take us on out of here. What you got?
Oh, man. I told you I wasn't going to play you this, Drew, but you got to feel this shit. All Them Witches, a band that you and me are very happy
with. Yeah, big fan of.
And big fans. They put out a thank you EP for everybody coming out and seeing them on tour, this last tour. It's on Bandcamp, and you can get it for pay what you want. And the last track is a dub track called Dub Passageways.
Hell yeah. Let's rubba dubba dubba.
Irie.
Let's dubba 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 our way out of here. For Adam, for Alex, for Nate, and for Andy, this is Drew. We'll see you next week on Hot Garbage.
Oh, seeing I've lay down your hammers, brother. Follow.
swallow.